You know the experience of traveling long distances, and you know how it can be a little disruptive. I can't shake the feeling that it's Tuesday morning. Do you get that? It feels like Tuesday morning. It's really Monday morning. It's not even Tuesday morning in the Philippines. It's really Monday night. But after breakfast, my body is saying, well, it's almost 9 at night. I mean, time to go to bed pretty soon. So it's not exactly an out-of-body experience, but it's the body and the mind are not quite in sync. I had that image of, you know, if you see those movies that are dubbed badly and the mouth moves and then the sound, something like that. The mouth and the sound don't go together. But the advantage of the animum life and of the liturgical life is that we have a way to get back, get our thoughts, our hearts really at least on track, even if our bodies are in a different clock. The liturgy is a great way to get back on track, and it's evidence of God's love. I mean, God's love doesn't change. God's plan for us doesn't change, and that's always a good thing to be reminded of when everything else changes. Not only travel, I'm talking about my own experience, but there's lots of things that throw us off. Illness throws us off. No, stress throws us off. Conflicts throw us off. You know, the situation in the world can be distracting and disturbing, and we need something to get us back on our, at least in balance and on track again, and the liturgy does this for us, so it's a great privilege. Well, I'll just take a few moments to reflect on these scriptures. We begin reading from this second letter of Paul to the Thessalonians, and a lot of times at the beginning of the letters, it just seems like he's just greeting the people and starting off it. But there's something interesting here that struck me. First of all, Paul, he greets them as he usually does. And then he gives them an affirmation of what in modern times we use affirmation statements. He gives this affirmation statement, how great their faith is, how much they love one another. They keep growing in faith and in love, and so much so that we can boast about you because you're persevering in all your trials. That's quite a thing to say, you know, you're really something. And it shows that there are times when we should honor what is good in people, even boast about what's good. I, you know, when I'm here, I boast about the community in the Philippines. When I'm in the Philippines, I boast about the community in the States, because it's what people don't know, and then they are encouraged by the example of others, and we don't see it in our own circle, but we can hear about it and say, well, yeah, we can strive to do better. So I think that's what Paul is doing here. But then, right after that, he shifts to a higher level and says, well, this is all the work of God. I love how he does this. This is evidence of God at work, that God is the one who's making you worthy of his calling, that God is giving you this grace, and we pray that he can continue to make all this happen for you. And we realize, well, this affirmation is done in light of, or with the awareness of, God at work. And this is the two sides, right, of the spiritual life. There's what we do and what God does. And even if we do well, even if we are persevering in times of trial, it's still God who is making it possible. So that even the boasting is done with a humility. Well, thanks be to God. Thanks be to God. That's what a good testimony, a witness does. It's a witness to the work of God. Thanks be to God that he's doing this. And so that's what I see here, this combination of grace at work and response to grace. Maybe we could connect it to yesterday's reading, which to me seems like 2 days ago. But Sunday, we had that great statement of Jesus, great and challenging statement of Jesus. Do you also want to leave? Do you want to leave? In other words, you have freedom. I'm not forcing you to accept my great gift. I know it's a challenging thing to hear me say, eat my body and drink my blood. But, you know, what do you want? This is what I have for you. I'm not going to change it. Here it is. Do you want to leave? And it's a great freedom. It just shows that God gives the gift And then he makes it possible for us to respond, but we still have to make the decision. That was yesterday's whole theme, right? All about decision. As for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. That's all made possible by the grace. No one can serve the Lord just because he says, I'm going to serve the Lord. God makes it possible, but he doesn't force it either. So that's what I see here with the Thessalonians. What Paul is acknowledging is the work of God among them, and they're responding. So he could say, look at these Thessalonians. They're doing a great job. Okay. Now, in sharp contrast to that, we get the Pharisees in the gospel. Woe to you, woe to you, woe to you. The gospel starts with a kind of strange thing. If you notice, it says, Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. Like, is he talking to the crowds and the disciples, or is he talking to the Pharisees? This is a little bit of a editorial mistake on the part of the liturgists, I think. The beginning of chapter 23 is addressed to the crowds and to the disciples. And the beginning, Jesus says, the scribes and then the Pharisees are the teachers, and you have to respect them, but don't follow their example. And he's telling his disciples about them. And then when he comes up to verse 13, then he turns to the Pharisees themselves and says, woe to you, Pharisees. But the way it's written here, it sounds like Jesus is saying to the disciples, woe to you, Pharisees. And that just doesn't make any sense. I mean, Jesus is not a gossip. He's not, you know, he doesn't direct to the wrong person the correction. So maybe you didn't notice that, but it stood out for me when I said, why is he saying this to the crowds? Why doesn't he say it directly to the... And I looked in the Bible. He really does say this to the scribes and the Pharisees. Woe to you, woe to you. And it's quite a sharp criticism. And none of us likes to be criticized. So I'm sure the Pharisees didn't take this one. Well, we know this comes right near the time of his passion. So Jesus is almost deliberately making them react. But he's also giving them an opportunity to see themselves. They're hypocrites, they're blind, they're fools, and they're ruining the very thing that they're proclaiming. They're claiming that they're guides to the spiritual life or to relationship with God, and in fact, they're getting in the way of the very thing that they're proclaiming. So this is really serious criticism, and it has to be made. I mean, if somebody's doing something this bad, God is going to step in and correct the problem or try to. Now, as I ponder this a little bit, I can't help but connect it to my own mission here. I mean, I said, well, why am I back in the States again? I was just here a couple of months ago, and I'm here for these basically two reasons. First reason is our retreat's coming up in a couple of weeks, and I want to be part of the retreat. But then I'm also asked to make these talks to promote the Anawim community and to invite people to consider Anawim spirituality and Anawim life. Kind of advertising for the Anawim community. So it's something like these Pharisees who were traveling over land and sea to get one convert. Well, I've traveled all the way over the Pacific to try to recruit people for the Anawim community. And the warning is you might get in the way of the very thing you're promoting. Now, I'm addressing myself, but all of us in Anawim have the same responsibility, because what will definitely turn people off is hypocrisy or a claim to be something that we're not, religious, spiritual, holy followers of the liturgy or something like that. And it gets pretty obvious as soon as people start participating in community life, whether that's true or not. It's terrible to be a hypocrite. It has disastrous effect. And I was thinking here, it says that the Pharisees make this great effort to make converts. And you say, well, why would anybody follow them? Why would anyone be taken in by that? Well, because the Pharisees actually did have something very precious to give, because they had the word. They had what was given by God, the commandments and the law, and that would attract people, even though they themselves are the hypocrites. And that's why Jesus said earlier in this chapter, they have the authority, so you know, do what they say, but don't follow their example. Well, we can apply that to ourselves, that we have something really precious, and that's why I like to advertise Anuam stuff, because I think it's really valuable. But there's always the danger that, and that's what will attract people to Anuam. There's the danger that our own life, our own way of putting it into practice can get in the way of the very thing that we're trying to advertise. Another memory came to my mind. You might remember this, Frank. Years ago, we went to some group. I think it might have been a Knights of Columbus group or something. And it's a bunch of old guys and drinking beer. And Frank's comment afterwards was, "Who would ever join that group?" I don't have anything against the Knights of Columbus, but they did have the reputation of being just running cheap beer halls. You know, they've rehabilitated their image a lot, because now they're really standing up for the church and promoting the faith and in a beautiful way. But that was 30 years ago, or 30, 35 years ago. I do remember. I said, "Well, gosh, here they are." Now, again, no judgment on them, but I mean, we could apply that same question of Frank to ourselves. Who would ever join this group? Who would ever join this Anuam group? Well, we have something precious to offer, for sure. But that we ourselves are called to be witnesses of what we receive and not hypocrites and not blind guides and blind fools. So just trying to apply this gospel to ourselves. I mean, we all have potential, and we're all hypocrites in some way, but we have the potential of getting in the way of the great work that God has entrusted to us. And here's a warning: don't do that. Be like the Thessalonians, who received grace and responded to grace, who had trials and had problems for sure, but they persevered in faith. And so they were bearing fruit, not only for themselves, but as Paul said, "I can boast about you to everybody." Good fruit. That's good fruit for the church and for the world.